The good news is we missed the Yellingtons picking up their son.
Okay.
That was good. Like last week.
Who are the Yellingtons?
Oh, their son Cacophony is a friend of my son's. And they just decide to yell their heads off.
Oh, so their last name isn't actually Yellington.
No, not really a German name. That sounds more British. Yeah, the Das Yellingtons. It's rarely Das. It would not be Das. It would be D in that situation, but Das just sounds funnier. When you're going to do a German the, what is funnier? Das or D?
I would go with Das.
I always do, man.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to episode 321 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubingen, Germany. With me as always is...
Adam, Vancouver.
I haven't been this excited about an episode since 123.
Yeah, I was going to say 3, 2, 1, blast off.
Okay.
Nothing.
Should we start again?
3, 2, 1, excitement.
There it is. That's much better.
Okay.
Yeah. So what's going on with you?
Nothing.
Amazon. Let's get right into that.
I forgot. Whenever I'm going to say nothing, just insert Amazon.
Have you ordered anything recently? No.
I think my wife ordered some books. So, okay. But I don't think they're actually in yet. So
the original Amazon.
What do you mean?
That's how Amazon started, was just books only.
Yeah, so I think she ordered some kids' books, maybe an adult book, but it was the situation of the book actually won't come in until March something, so we ordered it, but we won't see it for at least a month.
I just dealt with that myself. My book finally came. Speaking of books, remember I told you I like a month or more, I ordered that Fred Herzog book, the photographer.
Yeah.
It finally showed up.
And
on Friday.
Everything you dreamed?
It's a good book. Almost took my son's eye out.
Oh, so it's dangerous. They should have a warning on it.
Well, yeah. And that's not even a joke. He legitimately almost lost an eye yesterday.
Did they sharpen the edges, the corners?
No, it's not their fault. It's not like it was... It's not rounded, but they shouldn't expect kids to dive face first into it while you're reading it.
Right.
My kids were running around after I only told them somewhere between 12 and 15 times to stop it. And so really, the magic number is, it's Planck's constant. That's the magic number.
Okay.
And so until you get there, it's game on. And so my son came running away from my daughter and just dove head first, did not look where he was going, and actually went face first into the corner of the book, and it sliced his cheek open and stopped probably a millimeter below his lower eyelid.
Oh.
Wow.
Taught him a lesson.
Let's hope so. Don't read. Yeah. Get the Kindle.
Books are dangerous.
It's a good book, though. A lot of good photos. I haven't had a chance to go through the whole thing. I've been busy this week, but I look forward to seeing a lot more. The photos are really great, you know.
Is there a little explanation of, you know, with each photo, what was done?
No, a picture is worth 1,000 words, Adam.
That's it. It's just the photos. Just the photos and nothing else?
There's a pretty long intro to the book, which I've started to read but haven't got through all of it yet. And so I know they talk a little bit about that, about his history and what, you know, when he came over to Vancouver and what he shot with. And I don't know how specific they get. I do, you know, early on they did say, you know, with his new Leica. And so in terms of formats and stuff like that, I don't know.
But they don't say, like, you know, a little... In the photography magazines, you know, at the bottom of each image, it'll show, you know, the f-stop and the lens and whatnot. Mm. So it doesn't go into that kind of detail.
Negative.
Okay.
It does not.
All right.
But yeah, the pictures are fantastic.
Okay.
Some of them better than others, as is the case when you have a whole giant book that can take an eye out dedicated to photos, you know.
Right.
Some are better. But, so it finally got here. Speaking of books, got some of your recommendations for my daughter.
Okay.
the Fancy Nancy.
Yeah.
A couple of those showed up.
Yeah. Did she like them?
So far, she loves them. She got like a lot of books, actually. A friend of ours came over from Vancouver last weekend, and so thinking ahead, there was one book that was difficult for me to get here in Germany. Part of the other series that she reads, and when I say reads, sits and listens to while I read.
Right.
What is she? Junie B. Jones. That's the one. So there was one that's really hard to get in the series. Rest of them I can order here, but one just for some reason can't get. Don't know why. Okay. So I thought, here's my move. Like a month ago, I know my buddy's coming. I'm gonna order it to his house via Amazon.ca. Like it's a tiny little paperback. Throw it in your carry on. Boom, got the set.
Nice.
Yeah, he forgot it.
Well, no, his daughter's enjoying it.
His son.
Okay.
His son is the same age, and I said, I can't imagine how your son would like it, but okay.
Yeah.
His son does not. His son likes cars and Spider-Man. And this is not that. So, anyways, I think that's wonderful. However, he did bring a number of other books, and so what I had done after we spoke about the fan, this is probably not interesting, except for there is one little twist, which is kind of cool. I think.
Okay, I'm holding out for that.
You tell me if this is cool or not. And
yeah, so far not interesting.
Oh no, so far uncool.
Okay.
Yeah, no question. But you'd said, hey, you know, yeah, check out the Fancy Nancy, and I trust your wife's judgment, so I did. And on a whim, went on to Vancouver Craigslist from Germany and just found some lady who was selling a couple of Fancy Nancy books for like $10.
Okay.
Turns out, in Vancouver, like in Vancouver proper.
Okay.
So, I called my sister and said, hey, listen, can you do me a favor and just, if it's not too far from your house, maybe pick these up. Hand them off to our buddy, who she knows, and he'll just bring them.
Okay.
And it worked out just like that. Two brand new Fancy Nancy books, $10. So I don't know if this lady understands how cool that is, that they got shipped over to Germany like that.
Okay, you should let her know.
No, I'm assuming she'll eventually just hear this episode and realize.
Good chance. Pretty good chance. Hey, those were my books.
Those were mine. I can't believe they made it. Hopped right across the pond.
Yeah, so, now she's internet famous.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that's Amazon 2.0, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
When you combine Craigslist and iMessage,
right?
And
was that the interesting part of the story?
Turns out, no. I don't know. I thought it'd be kind of cool that.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. That was worth the first three and a half minutes.
It's your recommendation.
Listen, what can be done in faster than that story?
Okay.
The Rubik's Cube. Two minutes, 28 seconds.
228.
New best.
Eight.
And I followed it up with a 245, and then, now I'm usually now right around 3 minutes, just under, just over, but that's kind of my sort of steady time.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. I haven't been able to touch the sub 230 again. That was about three days ago, and I did the Rubik's Cube that day about 15 times, and it was on about the... I want to say about the 10th time that I did it that fast. And so I was really kind of in a groove. I think that helps too, to just do it, do it, and do it. And then it's literally by the 7th or 8th time, like autopilot, not really even thinking it.
Does your wife wish she could unmarry you now?
No, I do it when she's not around. So.
No, she has no clue.
Yeah. No, she knows that I've done it a lot of times, but yeah. It's kind of like if I'm watching TV, I tend to be playing with the Rubik's Cube at the same time. I don't really watch TV.
Do you get to a point where you can actually stop looking at like at
No, I can stop looking at it for parts. I can't do multiple steps because I have to keep looking at where I'm at, right?
Right. But you get to like when I get down to let's say I have the bottom corners done, or for you the top corners, I guess you work in a different direction, don't you?
Yeah, I think I'll work in a different direction.
Once I have the bottom corners done, I can usually put it on autopilot and do the moves. From what you're telling me, 228 though, I need to get a new cube.
Have you ordered one?
No, I didn't do it. I was going to go look in town, but I haven't been to town yet. And so listen.
There's a free Rubik's Cube app on the iPod. What?
You hear that? That's my cue.
It's not smooth. That's not smooth, yeah.
No, that's my cue. It's seen better days.
Right.
So I got to fight that. Now I'm getting competitive because we got to break 228. We got to go head to head sometimes. That'll interest nobody.
Yeah.
While reading Fancy Nancy.
Exactly. A live feed. No, while our wives read us Fancy Nancy.
I don't think we can go wrong. This is probably a new show on NBC.
Yeah.
Yeah. Delightful.
But no, what I was saying is there is a free Rubik's Cube app, like the legit Rubik's Cube app. And you can get a 3x3 cube, a 2x2. I think they have it up to a 5x5.
How do you turn it?
You turn it, you rotate the cube three-dimensionally with two fingers, sort of swipe, and then you basically can pick any line and swivel it in any direction. So it actually works. The only problem is, again, when you work the actual cube, now that I've done it so many times, you kind of work it pretty quickly and it's really easy to hit the wrong line, so you just can't do it the same. But it keeps track of your moves and your time, which is kind of cool if you could do it quickly like you can an actual cube, but I just can't do it. So I find it too frustrating in that every third twist I'll hit the wrong line and then I'll have to go back, and I just don't like it. So
no, but I can't imagine it being a thing.
Yeah,
it's funny because this is I don't know, funny how it works out, because I was going to ask you today, speaking of books and Amazon and all that, have you ever got a book on the Kindle or the Kindle app on the iPad or whatever?
I have got books on the iPad. I don't know about a Kindle app, but just
whatever, the same deal.
Yeah, I have, and you can even get books from the library that act as sort of loans on the iPad that I've done as well.
I've done
it recently. I've done it. Our public library allows you to do that, and I've tried it. I have never actually gotten through an entire book on the iPad.
Right.
I don't like it.
I
much prefer an actual tactile book.
I've tried.
I've honestly tried. I've read a chapter of a book, and then if I like the book, I just end up going out and buying the book, which is kind of weird.
Well, there was a book that I wanted to get that just, I mean, I guess it was available on Amazon.de, but it was like wildly expensive. Like just a, like not a picture book, just like a regular, you know, one of them
novel
reading books.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I was really interested in getting it. But like in Canada, I think the book, like the actual Kindle was like $12, but the book was $16.
Right.
So no problem. I get the book, no question.
Yeah.
But here in Germany, the Kindle was $12 and the book was like $95 or something.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So I said, well, forget that. I'm not doing that. So you know what? I've never tried the Kindle. I'll try the Kindle. It's a Kindle app that I have. So I bought it through Amazon. And yeah, I hate this. I mean, generally when I get into a book that I'm really into, which, you know, when I have time, I'll blow through that book in a couple of days, you know, which isn't record pace. I know some people who read a book in a day, like crazy.
That's Lisa, yeah.
Yeah, well, she doesn't do the Rubik's Cube, though.
That's true.
Doesn't waste a lot of her time on that. But,
yeah.
So I'm not exactly like a crazy fast reader, but, you know, I'll dedicate myself to it. Well, this thing, like I'm on chapter 2, and I've had it for a month. And it's a good book. Like, I'm really interested in it. I just forget that I have it.
Yeah.
And really hate it. Really
hate
reading.
I don't like the experience. The very first time I tried it, you know, for the first 3.5 minutes, I thought, wow, this is really cool and easy. And then, again, just it didn't stick with me. I just still prefer just pages and turning them properly and holding the book, not the iPad. So I don't mind scrolling down and reading an article that's going to take me 15 minutes on the iPad. That's fine for me. But yeah, like basically spending hours, I prefer just the pages. Yeah.
Now, maybe I'll come around.
I've tried.
I used to prefer my podcasts on 45. So
okay. Yeah. So you've made the leap there.
Yeah. Could probably should have said LP. Like looking back at the joke, yeah, I was processing that joke while I was telling it.
Yeah, we kind of got the gist, so I think you're okay.
Yeah, I'll probably go up, more Fancy Nancy talk. Let's see.
Talk to your writers back there.
Yeah, no writers.
Oh
no, that was just obviously no writers. Now the one case to be made for it, just before we get off this topic, is I've heard is that a friend of ours said he likes to read in bed while his wife's sleeping, and this way he doesn't have to put a light on because it's backlit.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's crazy talk.
I think that is the only argument mixed with, you know, if you're somebody who travels a lot and you're taking multiple books, and so it's just easy to pack a tablet, or if you have, like my wife does, the giant phone. She reads books on her phone, but she has one of those, you know, silly giant phone things that, you know, easily is slightly smaller than your average paperback.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I can see that, like, if you're always on the plane and you want to have, you know, 3-4 books on the go. That's the other thing with the way my wife reads is she doesn't just read one book at a time. She's often got 2 or 3 books on the go. So I can see for people who are crazy like that, that, you know, this from a portability standpoint makes sense.
Done. All right. So I had the friends in town, by the way. So my one buddy from Vancouver, our buddy came over, and then another buddy who's from Vancouver, lives in Germany. He drove down, so we had some good times this weekend.
Okay, any pictures in any precarious situations?
No, not really. Kind of kept it cool, but
real well. I don't know.
No, kept it. No, not cool. Definitely not cool. took very few photos actually, but we hung out with all three of us on the Friday night, and then he had to leave. He was going skiing with the family. And then Saturday, a couple of the American/Canadian guys from the team, baseball team, came over. And so we just decided to have way too much beer, not enough sleep.
Okay.
That was the move. But the whole point
of that
is...
They came over to your house?
Yeah, we just hung out here. We were going to have dinner here and then go out, and then just ended up playing cards all night.
Okay.
Which brings me to my question, do you know how to play euchre?
Yes, that's an Ontario thing.
Yes. Well, it made it out. Like, I think it also is a baseball thing. Like, because I guess a lot of the Ontario guys come out west and play. So I do know it from that.
But, yes, we used to have tournaments in high school. Like, it was something that I pretty much played every single day of my high school life. Every lunch hour, that's what we did, was basically play euchre, and then tournaments of euchre, and then, you know, on the weekends before we'd go out, you'd sit around and play euchre. Like, it was euchre. So much so, when I moved out west, basically had to find, like, because nobody knew how to play euchre, so I played, this was the early days of online anything, but one of the things that you could easily find online was an online euchre game. So it wasn't being played for money, it was just being played for fun.
Right.
I would play online euchre to get my fix. Now it's probably been a solid 10 years since I last played euchre.
Had I known, man, well, next time I'm back, we'll get a, because some of the guys can play now.
Yeah.
We played it nonstop in Italy. Like, once the kids would go to bed, all four of us, because, again, same two buddies plus one more from Vancouver were in Italy with us.
Yeah. Did you always keep the same teams?
Generally, yeah.
Yeah, because there's a thing about euchre, and it's kind of, you know, a chemistry thing. So I generally always played with the same buddy on the same team, and we like to think of ourselves as unstoppable, although we were stopped several times. We just kind of knew how the other guy played, so you play certain ways in certain situations. No table talk, that's big, but you just kind of knew, if you knew your partner really well, how they would play.
Agreed.
Yeah. So switching partners is tough.
Yeah. No, it's the guy, I play with the pitcher on our team, and pretty much that's who I play. Not in Italy, of course, but here that's we're kind of a team, and did that all night, basically from 8 o'clock at night, and played right through till like 4:30 in the morning.
Cool.
Which is just that's too much for an old guy.
Yeah, it is. You're gonna spend 3 weeks recovering from that.
Yeah. Oh no, the next day. Funny you should mention that. Next day I was reading my daughter a bedtime story. Don't have to name which one, you can figure it out.
Yeah.
About 7:15 on Sunday night. 7:15, fell asleep during mid story. Like, I think the book hit me in the face. Yeah, I went to bed and woke up at 7 the next morning.
That's awesome.
Yeah, nice. I haven't slept 12 hours in I don't know, many decades. All right. Enough boring stuff.
Yeah, where's the photography talk?
Netflix has a new series. I've only watched episode 1, but everyone's loving it. Called Abstract. Have you heard of this?
No.
So basically, a series on design. As far as I can tell.
Okay.
At least the first one is. The first one is actually a German guy who is from, he's from not too far from here, right here in Stuttgart. But you know, went to New York for a number of years and lives in Berlin now, and is rather somewhat famous. Designs, he's an artist, designs covers of the New Yorker magazine, amongst other things.
Yeah.
And so it's all just a story about him, and it really is a strange and wonderful documentary. And it's a series. I think there's 8 parts. Episode 7 is about photography, and so I haven't gotten there yet, but everyone's loving it. And so far, episode 1, I understand why. It's really quite good. And if you're listening to the show, if you got past all the Fancy Nancy and you're still listening, you probably will dig this series.
Okay.
So there you go.
I'll check it out. Abstract.
If you're a Slacker co-host of the show, you probably won't bother.
No, you will bother. Because you're watching it right now because you're so bored about all the Fancy Nancy talk.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. Monthly photo challenge. It's up next week.
Is it? Is it next week? That means there's no challenge issued at the end of this week?
Correct.
Oh, my goodness. It's like my birthday.
Only the one. Right. The... Is it too hard? Is this month's too hard?
I think it all depends on where you are in the world and whether you're getting, you know, magic hour at all. Like, I had it about a week ago, and I took some photos just kind of like placeholders, thinking, all right, I better get this because, you know, who knows when the next, you know, string of magic hour, when I'm actually home to take photos at this time. And turns out I haven't seen magic hour since that day. So we'll see. I still have a couple of photos that definitely qualify, and I'm fine with, but I was hoping that I'd get a few more opportunities this month to give it a try. So it sounds like there's a forecast for snow Friday here. So I might get another winter magic hour shot at it. But anyways, yeah, it's pretty crazy here. But we've seen a lot of overcast, warm weather, just not magic hour, not clear.
Right.
How about you?
Well, yeah, we've had some decent stuff. I've shot some stuff. I'm still waiting for that perfect photo. We have like another week to go. But I just mean in terms of participation. Last month at this time, we probably had a couple dozen entries on the Instagram. So far, we have the one.
Oh no!
Which again, I maybe went too difficult degree of difficulty. You know, too soon.
I did see one on Instagram, and I did comment on.
Oh, that's the one.
I think there might have been two.
I missed. Well, one of them might have been mine then.
Okay.
Where I said, "Hey, next month it's going to be magic hour."
Okay. I did see one. It was a kid in a backyard, like playing on a structure. Yeah, I saw that one, and
maybe everyone else is doing the space saver, the placeholder until they, you know, they get the, hoping they, you know, get a better one, maybe.
Maybe.
Or maybe we've just gone out of vogue.
I don't know if you know this, but I've actually posted photos on Instagram.
I've liked all of them.
Oh, okay. I don't know how that whole thing works. I don't look up who likes what. I posted some photos, and I've made some comments on other people's photos, and I've followed some people. And I even put a profile picture because my wife said it's kind of weird for me to just have the egg head. Yeah. So I put a photo of myself in there.
Right.
And look at me, Mr. Instagram.
Hey, that wasn't an egghead. I wasn't making an egghead joke. I think if you don't have a profile in Twitter, it's called an egg.
Yeah, I think one, whatever it is, it's not an egg on this one, but my wife referred to it as that. So that's a thing. That's calling it an egghead. Yeah.
I didn't want you to take it personally.
No. So.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Anyways, hopefully people can get out there and shoot them. And at the end
post
of the show,
post them.
We will reveal next week's, and it'll probably be a little less degree of difficulty.
Okay.
This one. All right. Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
Yes. It's not that. It's interesting-ish.
More than me.
I shot my daughter and my son. It's pretty cute, but they've been sharing a bedroom for the last, I'm going to say, 2.5 months.
Okay.
They took it upon themselves that they, you know, both at bedtime, like they don't spend much time in their rooms. They don't really play in their rooms very often at all, unless they have a friend over. But when it's just them, they tend to be downstairs with my wife and I, or if we're upstairs, then they're upstairs. They like to be near us. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they don't spend a lot of time alone in their rooms, but what they've decided at night is they like kind of to chat before they go to bed. And I mean, they used to kind of do it between the wall, but it was a little bit more difficult that way. So my daughter has one of those loft beds, right? So it's like a bunk bed without the bottom bunk. So it's just mm-hmm. open, and she had a desk under there. Well, they decided, like, for a while, my son was just kind of bringing his mattress and throwing it on the floor in a room. And we thought, well, why do we have two disjointed rooms? We could just basically have one room be an empty playroom.
Photo studio.
Or slash photo studio, and then we could put them together. And so they said, okay, well, they plan on staying there for at least until the summer. So I moved my son's bed frame underneath my daughter's loft bed, and then we took the desk that was in there and put it in the in his room. And the desk only occupies like a little corner. So now we essentially have an empty playroom, and then the walls are all blue. So I just, like, he had some posters and things. So I just kind of moved one wall worth of posters, kind of emptied it out, and then I thought, perfect, now I have a built-in backdrop that I can use anytime. So my daughter had a friend come over this weekend, and I just set up sort of a one light photo booth, just, you know, one light in an umbrella, a blue wall in behind, and, you know, basically said, go at it, you guys can you know, play dress up, whatever. And then I didn't even bother with the remote. I put a 10-second timer on, just said, come over here, press the button, go stand over there, and then you got your shot. Mm. And they played photo booth for like a good 45 minutes, and they piggybacking each other, and it was just a 50 millimeter lens. So they had to, like, a photo booth, figure out what was going to be inside the frame and what wasn't. And, you know, depending on how far they got from the camera, I think I put it at like an f8 so that they'd have a decent focal depth, right?
Right.
Yeah, they had a great old time. And then once they were done, I took all the photos, and then I downloaded a little app. Like, I had an app before I was using, but I downloaded one that was like a photo booth app that, you know, you could kind of decorate and put designs, and if they wanted to put little stickers on it. And then I just made them a photo strip, or actually the app did, and then I sent it to the girl's mom, so that, you know, here's what the kids did on the play date, and a little strip of photos. And yeah, they loved it. So easy, super easy, especially when you have that blank colored wall. I guess it would work with any wall that was blank, but I mm-hmm. liked having kind of the blue background. It looked to me pretty much what you'd get out of a photo booth.
Love having the colored. I don't have as many of the colored walls as I would like. Like, I think you should probably do have one room where you just paint all four a different color.
Yeah.
Like one of those cars, like one of those Beetles that has all the different, like, different colored fenders and all that.
Yeah. And the other thing that this room is, again, perfect for super quick setup. If I ever want to do just a simple kind of, you know, lit photo with a blue background, and again, I can change the color of the blue, I can light that background, I can make it turn, you know, completely black. But this essentially is a really great space to go to do a product shot or all kinds of different photos here, because again, I have some space, I can set things up, and I can leave it there if I want. But the other beauty of this room is it's become our mini sticks, mini hockey rink.
Oh yeah.
So We got a new little mini hockey net. We already had a whole bunch of mini sticks and foam balls. And so my son and I have been logging massive amounts of time up here playing mini sticks. Mini sticks was one of those things that I did, you know, nonstop as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But we never really had an open enough space. Like, downstairs is all flooring, and you just can't do mini sticks on flooring. It makes too much noise, plus it hurts like crazy on your knees. So we have brand new carpeting that we got done a couple months ago, and a really nice padded soft underlay, so it's actually really nice. And we played so much in the last 4 or 5 days that I literally had carpet burn on my knees.
I was gonna ask about the carpet burn. Yeah.
So guess what my wife got me, or I don't know if she bought it or she dug it up from somewhere in our house, but like a pair of volleyball knee pads is now now the old man wears volleyball knee pads to play mini sticks. Yeah.
The key is to just, you wipe your Bengay right into the knee pads.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And then it's two for one there.
It's pretty sad, but yeah, super fun. Takes me back to my childhood. My son can't get enough mini sticks, to the point where it's mini sticks every second of every day that I'm home, unless I sort of say, yeah, dad can't do mini sticks right now.
Dad tore a meniscus.
Yeah, exactly.
We played mini sticks until an embarrassingly old age.
Actually. Oh, yeah. I played with Spence, like, you know, basically as adults in our house in Langley. We used to play upstairs. So
that's who I was getting at.
Never ends. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No. Spence used to go upstairs just with the net by himself, just, you know, basically for half an hour, just shooting on the net. So there's where he's at as far as mini sticks. Yeah.
In probably his 30s.
Well, oh yeah, in his 30s, but now the sticks are amazing. So they're curved and they're like basically they're made out of the same material as the one piece hockey sticks are. So they're awesome. Like you can fire the ball with it because they have flex and again they're a little bit longer. So yeah, we have real McCoy mini sticks here. Yeah.
Sounds awesome. I can't wait. Yeah. When I come home next time, it'll be mini sticks and euchre. I'm in
there
for this.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, sounds good.
So good, because I actually shot a portrait of one of my son's friends who came over. He's three, and so it was the first time coming over to our house. And so I always try to, whenever the kid comes over for the first time, I always do kind of a black and white with the sort of dark gray background, like just the one light setup.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple for me. Email it to mom, and they always are reminded, oh, yeah, he takes pictures. Maybe we need to hire him. That's kind of my move.
Yeah.
And they get a free picture out of the deal, so it's all, you know, everybody wins. But other than that, shot nothing. Nothing in that's not interesting. Shot nothing interesting. I kind of got to break the funk. I think it's that late February. Bleh.
Yeah. And I mean, it all comes down to if you get, you know, super clear, great magic hour regularly, you're going to get out there and take photos. That's just what happens. But if you don't get that, then it just seems like so much more work.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. And so I shan't be doing that. All right, photo challenge. Let's get into that. This week was negative space, kind of a negative name for a cool thing, I think.
Okay.
But that's kind of what it's called. I've heard it be called white space before, but that's, you know, it's not always white, is it?
No, and I think you made that up, so.
No, I didn't. I didn't. That's a marketing term.
Okay.
It's it comes from, yeah. So it's a thing, but I think we need a better name than negative space. Let's have a look at yours, because yours really is negative space. Yours is all black.
Yeah.
Except for the cube, which you can see the little melting spots on your cube from how you're just turning it so fast.
Yeah.
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 Caught fire.
It is. It's been torched. This was done in my photo studio.
Oh, this is the new photo studio. What is that floor?
Playroom. That's just like it's not a floor. It's like the top of like a leather, like dark leather sort of ottoman. I don't know if is that what they're called. That you storage kind of little ottoman. So I just basically positioned that a good, I don't know, 6-7 feet from a blue wall. Knocked down all the light. Used a single flash, sort of up and slightly camera right, and snooted it so that it acted like a spotlight. Super low power, just enough to kind of basically illuminate the cube and a little of the space on the top of that leather. The leather was super reflective, so I really turned the flash down low because I didn't want it, you know, basically creating this big sort of glossy reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and that's it. That's it. One light. I just moved it around in a few spots to kind of decide, you know, which parts of the cube I wanted illuminated. And yeah, this is kind of, I intentionally didn't finish the cube.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of a Rubik's Cube sort of in joke, if you would call it that.
I don't see what, like, it's not just the one piece that's not finished.
Right. It's basically the very last step. In the way I do the cube, this is the very last step. So there's one algorithm left to complete it. So,
but the other one that is out of whack is on the other side, or where is it?
Yeah, there's three sides that are out of whack with the one piece in the middle. It can always be different as to which spots are missing, but this is with one side is completely completed on the sides. The top and the bottom are completely completed, and then you have the middle spot in this pattern out of whack in the three other sides. So there's one algorithm left to complete.
Okay.
Is this not how you do it? Is this not how it ends up every time before you do your last set of twists?
No, because generally in this case, like that one would be out and then directly opposite, sort of camera left into the back, the one right across would be out. And those two, and that's how I would solve it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the same.
Okay, but it's only two pieces that are out, not three.
No, there's three out. Oh, for you, it would only be two.
In this case, it would only be two. Oh, no, that's not true. It could be three. You're right. It could be three.
Okay.
There's different options. In this case, I can't tell your colors right now because the front, I can't really see the color of the front, which was that white?
No, there's orange is right, green is left.
Green, okay.
Yeah, yellow on top, white on the bottom. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think in this situation, the blue is fully completed. And so red also has this same pattern of red with...
all right. Nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody cares.
I care.
Nobody else. But the whole point to me was, because I don't really do this very often, certainly a product shot is something I do pretty rarely. I mean, I mm-hmm. do it occasionally for photo challenges, but it's not something I ever think to, hey, I'm just going to take a photo of that object, that inanimate object. So I don't do that very often. But to me, the point of the challenge was, you know, not just to do negative space, but a situation where the negative space would actually be a better photo than if I just sort of shot this in a close-up without the negative space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this situation, I don't know if it's the spotlight effect. I don't know what it is, but I did it. I did another photo. I should have cropped this photo and given you the other version. But basically, to me, this is a more pleasing to the eye photo with the negative space than without it.
I agree.
I don't know why. I don't know why. It just mm-hmm. is. Yeah.
I agree. And this is one of those things. I know that you're not a big negative space kind of guy, but this to me is the, without the negative space, it's not a photo. It's just
yeah.
And it's a photo I've made many times. Like I've actually shot my Rubik's Cube. Rubik's Cube is actually great to shoot for lighting and colors and stuff like that, and to work on different things. It's awesome. But I don't have any on my wall.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So there's that. So I think the negative space works really great here. I think the black, white could work too, but it doesn't matter. That's the beauty of it. And so in this case, my only real criticism is I don't love the scratches I didn't know it was an ottoman.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was. It's just sort of, for some reason, I get it. It works okay, I guess, cause it's just that one left corner and it's incongruous with the rest of it, which is just silky, silky, smooth black.
Yeah.
Don't know if I need the scratches, but that's just really minor. That's not.
Yeah, and I looked at it too, and I basically came down to, well, would I really bother photoshopping those out? And that's where I was at. I was like, well, no. Again, I kind of thought, okay, well, I could throw dark gray photo paper underneath it, and then I thought, well, now this is becoming like a much more complicated endeavor. Like the whole
it's
reason
becoming
I did
challenging.
The whole reason I did this was because I'm like, I can do this in probably 45 seconds.
I can do this in less time it takes me to solve the thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of the idea was I just want to do something super simple here for a cool effect. And here's the takeaway from my standpoint is this is super easy and a pretty cool effect. I mean, if you have a better black unscratched surface, then you're probably going to get an even better result. But mm-hmm. the snooted flash with basically any color background, as long as you keep your subject or object far enough from it and knock the ambient light down, you can get this crazy, like these colors aren't even close. Like I got a brown top there, like ottoman top, and I got a blue wall.
Yes.
Right? And so, and with the snooted flash on low power in a dark room, it's all just black, and that's awesome as far as creating a cool spotlight effect. So forget Rubik's Cube, but I mean, this can
come up.
I have
two words for you.
What?
Hot wheels.
Yeah, exactly. I thought you were going to say hot move. Yeah.
Hot move. No, I shoot my son's Hot Wheels cars like this. I love this technique.
Yeah, so here's something I think that, you know, the masses who aren't already doing this can employ. All you need is one light or one flash. It could be almost any light. You could take a flashlight and snoot it and get this effect.
Don't do that, though.
No, get a off-camera flash.
Spend the money. You're right. You're absolutely right.
You don't need a lot of flash power here, right?
No, you don't. No, this is a great technique. I love this kind of overhead lighting. And, like, you can move it around. This is a whole other episode. Like, we're actually going to – it's funny. Again, once again, this episode was almost going to be entitled Snoots. It's not. But next week will be.
Okay.
Just for this reason. Just because, wow, you absolutely nailed it. And I love this technique. So there you go.
Okay.
All right, let's have a look at mine. My goal also was to be very, very fast. and basically stepped outside, walked down the street a little bit, and found some sky. Well, you here, you look at the image. That's my image.
Okay. This is a move that you like to do, which is gel the flash, right? Gel the flash,
yes,
an orange or a straw, and then as a result, basically get that super dark blue sky.
Wonderfully gray. It was East Berlin gray today. Like, it was just awful today.
Right.
And I knew, yeah, let's get some cool colors. Let's make something cool. So yes, I did. It was a, well, you mentioned it was actually a double CTO, double color temperature orange,
in order to get that dark blue contrast.
Correct.
Yeah. And again, it looks really good. The only critique I have is that parts of the camera, again, I don't know if it's just my monitor, but just become really pink.
They might be. Yeah, you're talking to the colorblind guy.
Okay.
Just I tried around to dial that
in. Around the camera, sort of the edges, around the lens, like reddish kind of pinky, that, again, I guess maybe you can desaturate the red channel or pink channel, magenta, mm-hmm, whatever, a little bit to make it look like it's right. Because, yeah, I knew what you had done, because this is one of your moves that you like. And, again, it's a pretty, pretty sweet move to get that cool-looking sky. But it does, on my monitor anyways, make the camera not look color correct.
It is the fact that it's a double CTO. If I did a regular CTO, I wouldn't get the super dark blues, but I also don't know how to, like, number-wise, I don't know what the corresponding numbers are to dial in for the proper white balance. If I use a full CTO, I know that if I set it for the 3200, like the basically the tungsten balance,
yeah,
I'm going to get a bluish sky, and it's going to be about right on the camera. But with the double, I then have to kind of go and dial it in myself, because you don't have double tungsten. You don't have that.
Gotcha.
And again, that's where being the colorblind guy kind of comes in. So it looked up to me, but something looked odd. But I can't place what it is. Now I know I'm going to probably go in and tune that up now that you mention it.
And again, it's mild, but that's not what I want, though. Yeah, that's what I noticed.
You know, it is tough because it's a black camera, and I wanted to separate it from the background by using color. I mean, like, it's a black camera on a gray day, so I actually shot a version of this in black and white, and it's just nothing. It's nothing. It's nothing you'd look at twice, whereas this you might look at exactly twice.
Right. And I do like the negative space here, as well as the angle and direction of the camera. So it sort of matches the negative space here nicely. Like, I think if that camera angle was more direct, like head on, mm-hmm, it would look weird.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it would look like it was basically photoshopped onto a background.
Exactly.
Would think.
So I like the fact that the camera angle, again, seems here a good fit for where the negative space is. I mean, sometimes, you know, for effect, you could have turned that camera and pointed it the other way, and your brain, or my brain at least, would have had a slight meltdown.
Right.
Just in terms of it wouldn't have added up. Like, why would the camera be facing that way and all the negative space? That would be double negative space. So I like here. This makes sense to my brain, and I like this.
Well, I very specifically lit this way, too. Like, I turned it that way. Basically had there's a whole reasoning behind all of this. Like, and so when I was going to go shoot a negative space, you know, just for the listener, we normally record on Fridays. We had to do it 2 days early, and so I wasn't prepped. When you told me this morning, I woke up and, oh, we're doing it today. It wasn't kind of what I had in mind.
Okay.
But then I quickly said, okay, I got to go shoot today. And then I said, you know what? You know what we need? You know what the two hosers need is something to go on Instagram, basically an ad. Like, we need just a quick ad that people can send out to say, hey, check these guys out. And so I said, well, I'm going to make this about using the negative space so that it can be an advertisement for us. So okay, it needed to be a camera. I wanted it to be, you know, camera-centric. I just like the idea of the sky. I wanted to use that sky as an element. It's not perfectly negative. Like, yours is completely uniformly black, which is great. I shoot a lot of that stuff myself. I love that. But for this, I just kind of wanted to zig a little bit and have it be negative space, but have a little variation to it.
Okay.
And then basically wanted to point the camera that way. I wanted to have the text on the left, and so you could sort of see it into the right. Sometimes you want the image on the left, and then people can read, because you read left to right in most countries, or a lot of countries. And so you got to think about it that way. But I wanted the text on the left. I wanted it to come up two hosers, and then you kind of read into it, the camera. So the camera had to face that way, and I also wanted to short light it. That was important. I don't like broad lighting almost ever. Like, it's just like, as we talked about last week, when I screwed up one of the photo challenges,
mm-hmm.
I accidentally, you know, broad lit the subject, and I hate it. And so this is actually short lit. You can see the shadow of the lens kind of falling onto the right side of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it is lit by a bare flash, probably half power, being handheld on 85 mil zoom, basically just out of frame. I'm actually holding it on a stand, but getting it just out of frame so I can get maximum power, because for me to darken that sky, because that sky is about two stops underexposed, okay, to get that deep, rich blue color to it. And then other than that, the rest of it is essentially out of camera. Like, it's not, I didn't have to mess with anything, really. Anyways, the point being is then I then came up with the next photo, which is going to be our little ad, once I fix the pink, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it's going to look like.
Cool.
Except I forgot to put our logo on there, so I shall add that in the corner.
And then I see your other ad. Are you going to mention that?
Yeah, I was going to mention it to you.
Oh, okay. I like the other one even better.
Yeah, that one's kind of fun. We'll put that out, and we'll talk about that maybe next week. But we're going to put that out. People can check that out. So that was Negative Space. Okay, topic this week is kind of a little bit of a shift, and it's gonna lead into our monthly challenge, though. What's the aperture? Okay, go ahead. That's my question to you.
Is that like the temperature?
No.
Okay.
You don't have apertures. Right?
Yeah, I know what it is, but how do you just ask that as a question?
You don't. Like, that's really unfair.
Yeah. Are you kind of like alluding to the fact that your friends who see your photo, who are just starting to learn about photography, they think, you know, they look at your photo and they're like, oh, what's the aperture on that? Like, is that a reasonable question,
but no.
Okay.
I'm glad you asked.
I'm out.
Stop. I'll just tell you.
Okay, you tell me.
Essentially, we talked a over six years ago about aperture and what it does. Episode 3, I believe.
Sure.
Sounds
about right.
Yeah, I think the first one was, hey, this is us.
Mm-hmm.
Then ISO was next, and then aperture. And you could make a case for aperture having really should be the first episode. I mean, if you think back.
Before hello, this is us?
Well, not before that, but I mean, before, like, in terms of learning things.
Sure.
You know, we started with ISO, but it could have started with aperture. And, you know, we talked about what aperture is and what it does, and both physically, like what the camera actually is physically doing.
Yeah.
And how it affects your exposure triangle and your depth of field. We talked about that.
Okay.
But we haven't talked about it since.
Okay. So go back and listen to episode 3.
We'll do that. You should have listened to that by now anyways.
Okay.
But,
all right.
But have we considered that aperture is probably, I think it is, the most important corner of the exposure triangle?
Yes.
Okay, why?
Not always, but I'm going to say most of the time.
I think in general, if you take a macro look at your photography, and not just the arts part of it or whatever, just in general, I don't know if we have talked about it, how important aperture is.
It's very important.
Okay, drive safe, everybody.
Yeah, very. I'm going to hit the V real hard.
Moving on. Lenses. Lenses that we buy. Like you're going to go buy a lens. You figure out, you know, hey, what's the focal length? But the very next thing that comes up, it's categorized by?
Shutter speed.
Your lens, yeah. How fast can your lens have a shutter speed? Also gasoline.
Yeah. No, aperture. I think you're looking for aperture.
I was looking for aperture, f-stop, whatever. And so, like, you go, oh, is that the That's the 85 mil. Oh yeah, is it the 1.8? No, it's the 1.2. You know, we talk. We don't talk like that.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we kind of do. But we pretty much have the same lens selection. So there's no competition there.
That's right.
But they're categorized like that for a reason, because it is that important. Okay. Now, in my opinion, and I think everyone's opinion, it's wider is the better. Like wider aperture is going to be it's more expensive anyways.
Yeah, it gives you more options too. So that is kind of, you know, the point of it, right?
Yes, it is the point of it. It's, I mean, I want my lenses to be able to open as wide as possible,
right?
In case I'm in low light.
Exactly.
I don't want to be in low light.
No.
I don't look for it. I look for good light, but you generally want to be able to deal with low light. However, on top of that, as it goes, for the most part, I'm sure there's exceptions that I don't know about. If your lens, the wider your lens opens, the more expensive it is, probably the better it is, even if you're shooting at f8.
Right.
So they're telling me that the 85mm f1.2 is a much better lens at f8 than the 85mm f1.8 is.
Right.
I don't know if I buy it. Or maybe I do buy it. I don't know if I care.
Right.
Probably don't. But the point is, aperture plays a massive role in your lens.
Yes. And I mean, it does. I mean, obviously, you know, it's called the exposure triangle for a reason. And, you know, shutter speed will affect your aperture and vice versa. But a lens with, you know, an aperture that can go f1.8 or f1.2 really gives you more, you know, wiggle room as far as your shutter speed's concerned as well. So again, mm-hmm. we're talking about, you know, options and low lighting, and that the aperture has a profound effect on shutter speed.
It does.
Yeah.
But that's the order that you work in. Like generally, I know there's people who work backwards, and occasionally I will work shutter speed first and go, okay, if I'm shooting sports, which is very rare, but I absolutely need a shutter speed of 1/4000th. Now I'll work backwards.
Right.
But
you're still going to get a much better image if you need to work in a 1/4000th of a second. You're still going to have a much better chance of getting the image you want if you have that lens that gives you that extra wiggle room.
I got a visitor here. Hang on.
Oh, no.
Say hello.
No.
You have to say hello.
Hello.
No.
Okay, you have to go. Well, then.
Sounds agreeable.
Hey, say goodnight to everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, buddy.
Good night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that yeah, was. So I did that miss really, part of.
That brings the whole conversation to a abrupt close.
Well, for him, it does. He's going to bed. I did miss the very, very end of what you said, but I kind of figured out the gist of it. Yeah,
it was again just that aperture is awesome.
But for most of your photography specifically, and mine, we shoot very similar things, similar methods. You work, you know, hey, what aperture do I want, and then the rest you work back in.
Right.
Now, let's say you're shooting with flash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The more aware that you need to be much more aware and slash hyper aware about aperture. Mm-hmm. When it comes to shooting with flash, whether it's on camera, off camera, aperture is everything.
Right.
It can make or break your image. Okay.
Correct.
Why is it so important? Am I overdoing that? I don't think so.
No, because, why? I mean, we talked about it in an early flash episode, too, that more or less your aperture controls the flash. Like, if you keep your flash output constant in a manual situation where, let's say, you have, you know, 1/8 power, you can change the shutter speed without really having an effect on that flash exposure. But changing the aperture profoundly impacts that exposure.
Correct.
So that's why, and again, in flash, I more or less, for the most part, work at the max sync speed, And then really you're not, you're, that variable kind of basically gets out of the way. And now really all you're controlling is, you know, your ISO or your aperture. And often, again, I deal with flash in a low ISO situation. So now really the only variable I'm controlling is either flash output power or aperture to dial it in.
But you're always aware of what your aperture is. Like, it's very rare when it's actually, I wouldn't even say rare. It is never when I'm shooting flash and, you know, if someone says to me, oh yeah, what f-stop are you at? I can answer them every time without looking. Like, I have set it specifically for what it is that I'm shooting.
Right.
And so it's rare that I go, oh, I don't know. Oh yeah, look at that. Hey, it's an F-22. That's weird. No wonder everything's black. That doesn't come up.
Right.
There's also the idea, not to do with flash necessarily, but the idea of a T-stop versus an F-stop. And we talked a long time ago about how I would bring that up on the show. Didn't really want to make it a whole episode because it's kind of short.
Right.
But really quick, the difference between F-stop and T-stop, besides being really pretentious, which is awesome, if you want to be a T-stop guy, is F-stop is a calculation. It's a ratio. The ratio of basically how wide the aperture will go, physically go open, compared to the focal length of the lens.
Right.
So like a 50 mil lens that opens up 25 mils will be an F2. I hope I got that math right. I didn't write that down. That was on the fly.
Okay.
That definitely.
I'm going to just say sure.
Yeah. But that's how it goes. And so that basically says, all right, that's how much light comes in. It's an F2. But is an F2 an F2?
Right.
Sorry, maybe. Gertrude Stein. No, the answer is no. It's not, because, you know, an F2 on a prime lens is probably, the light is coming through probably less glass than on a zoom, depending.
Right.
It's a lot of factors going on. So it's kind of like the... You know, like, hey, how many horsepower do you have in the engine? Well, it doesn't really matter if you have a terrible transmission. So if nothing's getting to the back wheels, then your horsepower doesn't really matter
right
up front. And that's kind of the case with the f-stop. So if a lot of the light is being lost and not getting to the sensor, well, your f2 is really going to be an f2.8 or, you know, something like that in terms of how much light gets through. Versus the t-stops, they go ahead and actually measure them. Like they pump the light through, and that light is based on how much light is actually making it to the back end.
Gotcha.
That's what T-stop means. Is it a huge deal for digital photography? No.
Maybe?
The answer is no. T-stops do not matter.
Although, if you're buying a new lens and you're, you know, 70 to 200, you might consider that, you know, when you're reading reviews, is that okay if I'm wanting a 2.8 because I'm shooting low light sport photography, I'm thinking of hockey in my own situation, then I might, you know, consider, okay, what is the t-stop on the various lenses, and
true,
if I'm trying to again decide which one to buy, that might come up
possibly. Generally, if you're buying a decent, you know, well-priced lens, like if you get like an f2.8 and it's a good lens, you're, you know, maybe it's a 2.84 split. Like, you're not going to lose a ton compared, you know, of actual light. And so your camera can generally make up for it. It's close enough, but you're right. In those situations when you're really working in the extremes, you do want to have that. More importantly is when you're metering. Like, if you're metering for, like, you're shooting film, that's when it came into play, like shooting a movie film. You don't have a meter in your movie camera. You do now, right. in the digital stuff. You have basically, you know, you have a histogram and whatnot, you know, and scopes in your camera. But shooting old like 35mm film movies, there is no meter. So you're not metering through the lens. You have to use a light meter. And so, you know, if your lens is your F2 lens is really a T5 or a T5.6 or something like that, you're going to be underexposed.
Right.
And you won't know until a week later. So that's where it comes in. But anyways, that's kind of a digression. I kind of wanted to address that. So with that, how do I, and I know Adam's the same, how do I approach aperture, like dealing with aperture in photography? I wrote notes, so you don't have to answer.
Okay, because I wasn't sure exactly what I would say.
Well, first step when it comes to this is I assess how much light we need to get through.
Okay.
Like if it's really dark or if it's really, really bright, I'm going to probably be limited into what aperture I can use.
Now, you're thinking of a situation where you're shooting ambient light only, or because, I mean, obviously that can be supplemented with you know, external light.
It can be. But for now, just to keep it simple, like when my basic workflow
right.
is just when I am deciding on aperture, when I'm dealing with the exposure triangle and all of that, like my first step is aperture. But first I assess how much light we need. So if it's like I said, if it's really, really dark or really, 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 really bright, I'm probably going to be limited. And so I'm going to have to deal with the situation. But generally, let's assume that I've hopefully put myself in a good situation, like we've talked in the past. Put yourself, like last week, shoot for the bullseye, right?
Mm-hmm.
That way you got great light, and now you can control whatever you want. You can go F1.8 if you want, F20. It doesn't matter. Anywhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's the first step, is figuring out how much light we need. Second, in my head, I'm always thinking to myself, when dealing with an aperture, how much of this image do I want in focus?
Right.
Like, that is my, honestly God, my first decision I make on game day.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Like, maybe I have a group of people that I want to shoot, and I need to hold focus from the front to the back. Maybe it's a row of three people. And I know that if I shoot at an F1.8, people in the front and the back are going to be slightly out of focus.
Right.
I don't want that. I choose an aperture based on that.
Gotcha.
So in that case, probably an F8 or an 11. Or can I throw the background way out of focus in order to separate my subject from it? Can I do that? In that case, I'm going to go as wide open as I can.
Right.
And that I can afford to lose that focus. There's no one in behind. Or do I need deep focus? Do I need this shot? Do I need everything to be in this shot? Generally, I prefer something in between.
Right.
I don't like to go on either extreme. Does that sound about how you do it?
Yes.
Okay. I knew it.
Knew it.
Next step, third step, is... I mean, this is assuming we're not shooting with a flash, because flash would enter here is how much flash power do I have, and how stop down can I go? But that's a little more confusing than I want to get today.
Yeah, stick with just natural light.
So the third step is what I always hear about is the quote-unquote sharpest aperture for that lens.
Okay.
Have you heard about this?
Yep.
Yeah. I find this to be wildly subjective.
Okay.
Now, I've heard that it's generally, or the rule is, it's 2.5 stops down from wide open.
Right.
You know, or three stops. I think it's probably three stops, but if you say 2.5, you sound a little more professional.
Right.
And then what you do is you say, well, it's 2.5 stops down from the maximum T-stop. It's quite simple. It's quite simple, really. That's how you sound like a jerk at the coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I've heard that. I've heard it's generally the sharpest it's going to be. Maybe. I think it depends a lot on the lens.
Yeah.
And maybe on your own personal definition of sharp, you know? Or how much sharper is sharp? Like if you shoot at a 1.8 and then shoot at an F6... it's going to be sharper. We're not talking about focus. We're just talking about sharpness.
Right.
It's going to be sharper at F5.6. How much sharper?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't think anybody knows. 11. It's going to be 11 sharper. You know?
But I think that, you know, the moral of the story is, I mean, if you're looking for a sharp image, you're pretty safe, you know, 5.6 and smaller apertures are very safe.
That is correct. That's
almost
a great way
universally,
to put it.
Right? Like, there's not too many. Yeah, I mean, there's probably some crappy lenses that hopefully you're not shooting with that still aren't sharp at f/6, but then they're just not good lenses.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, 5.6. And I mean, I don't know if it's 100% accurate for all lenses, but you know, they say, okay, f/8 is universally going to be sharp amongst any decent lens.
Well, nothing is universal is what I found out.
Okay. Well,
but you're right. You're right.
Always, like, yeah. You're safe in the middle there.
Generally, like if I want to get like maximum sharpness, no matter what I'm shooting with, I go 5.6 to 8.
Yeah.
That's what I do. Wide open is going to be softer.
Yeah.
A little bit. Stop down all the way is also going to be softer. It's kind of weird like that. You'd think you'd just be, oh, no, everything's just going to be. But there's a whole bunch of stuff going on that Don Komarechka will explain to us sometime. But I don't, for me, I don't care.
Right.
You know?
So let's get Don to explain it.
I'll get him to do it. Yes. However, if you think about it, like I always think about it this way, that, you know, let's say f/5.6 is the complete wheelhouse for your lens. Like that's where you say, oh, yeah, you're going to get the best results. Now, if you shoot it at f/1.8, it's going to be softer, that's for sure. But what if you shoot it at f/4? How much softer is it going to be, and are you even going to notice?
Probably not.
Probably not. Same with f/11. So I would say at that point, so when I say it's a factor for me, it's rarely, I don't know, I guess it is. It's just burned into my head that for the most part, I find the best results in general come down to me shooting it around f/5.6. But oftentimes I'll shoot it at f/4. Like I might just set my camera to f/4 and that'll be my, like, for the day. I'll shoot everything at f/4 without changing. Yeah. So the bottom line in this, in what's the aperture, is I am always aware of the aperture I'm at.
Me like too.
Never do I grab, I shoot, like you, I shoot in manual mode. Like almost exclusively.
Yeah.
Very rarely do I shoot an aperture priority. And if I do, I'm dialed in the aperture and I know it. I don't think I've ever actually used any of my cameras in shutter speed priority.
Yeah. Well, me either.
Even to test it out, I get the idea, don't need it. So no matter if I use flash or not, every single shot I'm aware of what my f-stop is. It's one odd quirk that I know you do not share. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's just weird.
Okay.
I almost always shoot in full f-stops. 2, 2.8, 4, 5, 6, 8, 11, 16. I rarely shoot in a 3.2. Or 6.3 or whatever they are.
Yeah, and I know that's probably, again, because of the film background there, where it's just, those weren't an option, right?
Well, those numbers weren't, those are exclusively the domain of digital. I don't remember ever. Like, we used to talk about, like, if you shot between, you know, well, I guess it would be 6.3. Like a 6.3, I think, is an aperture, right?
Yeah.
Sounds right? Okay, well, That's a third over 5.6. Like that's a 5.6. That's a 5.6-8 split. That's what that means.
Right.
And so, I guess coming from that background, you're right. And never, ever, ever, no one ever said, yeah, it's a 6. Even my light meter doesn't have that on it. It just has a split. It says how far between 5.6 and 8 are you?
Right.
You know, or that's a 2.8-4 split. So where does that go? Is it a third of a stop, 2/3, whatever? And now, just because I guess the hyper awareness of it. I can't actually set, I guess I'm a little bit Rain Man like that. I can't set my camera to an F and in between a 12.
That's your prerogative.
It is my prerogative.
I think you're missing out.
Oh, I can't do it. I can't do it. I need the 6 fish sticks. So
I'm just going to get a t-shirt that says 7.1.
That will make me so uncomfortable. Definitely 243 toothpicks.
Yeah. It'll be like, you know, like a jersey number on the back. 7.1 with a camera on the front. Yeah.
Please don't.
Super weird in joke. Yeah.
At least make it perfect middle gray so I can white balance off of you. If that's the case, then we're okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. That's how I approach aperture. That's how I know what to shoot at.
Okay.
Anything to add to that? Anything that you do differently?
No, I think that's exactly how I do things.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, seems reasonable. You learned here on this show.
That's right. I learned from you. So there you go. Touch all the bad habits. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
All right. So next week's challenge is the monthly challenge. And we're going to, like I said, we're going to make it a little bit easier. The degree of difficulty is going to come down, and it's going to tie in to aperture. It's going to be shallow depth of field.
Okay.
So there you go. So that one we could do pretty, it's pretty wide open. No more hints. Just you get out there and shoot shallow depth of field. If you don't know how to get shallow depth of field, listen back. We talk about it many different episodes, but I think we actually have a depth of field episode.
Yeah, it's probably in the first 15 anyways.
At least. I would assume it's that early.
Yeah.
So definitely check that out. Or
and there
were
some videos, too. You had a couple of videos about, you know, depth of field.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Look, man, we don't remembering.
We certainly don't make videos anymore.
No.
Maybe we should. Not this week. All right, but point being, have a look at those. Have a look at on our video page. There's probably some stuff there. And if you still have any questions, feel free to shoot us an email, a tweet. We get those. Ask us on Instagram, although I don't know how that works. Go ahead and do that. Did I say email?
Sure.
Email.
Yeah, you did.
And Facebook.
Hopefully we'll get more than 3 photos on Instagram for the monthly challenge. That's we're aiming high this month. We're going to aim for 3. So we have 1. We need 2 more submissions.
Well, it's you and me.
Oh, okay. No, 2 more that aren't ours.
Oh, so 5 in total.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, again, I may have could have gone Icarus on this one, gone too close to the sun. Don't know. Just if it is a very difficult one, second time out.
Okay,
I appreciate that. So yeah, that's it. Hashtag Two Hosers Monthly Challenge, which you can find on our website. Okay. Meanwhile, Adam, where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca and. Potentially on Instagram.
Probably.
Probably never again on Facebook because, I don't know, I'm on to a new media now.
Hey, once they've seen Instagram, how do you keep them on the farm?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. You can find my stuff at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com where you can find all the links, photos, and everything we just talked about. So that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.